We are honored today in having as our speaker one of the great women of our generation. Sister Belle Smith Spafford was born in Salt Lake City. She graduated from the Normal School of the University of Utah in 1913, after which she continued her training at the Brigham Young University. She was a teacher in the Salt Lake City schools from 13 to 17, a special instructor, or the supervisor of the grade schools at Brigham Young University Training School from 1917 to 21, and then a special instructor for remedial work for retarded children. She became a member of the board of the Relief Society in 1935 and edited the Relief Society Journal from 38 to 45 and has been general manager of that journal since 1945. She became a counselor in the presidency of the Relief Society in 1942 and general president since 1945, and business manager of the Relief Society Social Welfare Departments, also business manager of the Mormon Handicraft Gift Shop since 1945. She has been a delegate to the National Council of Social Work, Seattle, Washington in 38, to the International Conference of the National Council of Women in New York City in 1946, International Council in Philadelphia in 47, and second vice president of the National Council of Women of the United States from 1948 to 1956, a member of the Executive Committee in 1956, a delegate representing the Women of America to the International Council of Women Conference in Finland in 1954, a member of the National Advisory Committee for 1916 and the White House Conference on Aging in 1959. She's a member also of the National Board of the National Association of Practical Nurse Education and has been second vice president of that national organization. You will note, I'm sure, from this that she's not only a leader of the women of our church, but she has recognized for her leadership talents in many national organizations and has presided over a number of national conferences of women in this country. We had the honor at this institution of conferring on her an honorary doctorate degree in 1956, and I'm grateful for the opportunity of presenting her to you at this time, Sister Belle Smith Spafford.
Each time I visit this great institution, I'm impressed anew with its growth. Not only its growth in facilities, but its growth in the size of its student body. I believe the last time I visited this school that you were holding your assemblies in the Joseph Smith Building. Within my memory, College Hall was too large and commodious a building to house the student assemblies. This morning, it is a thrilling experience to me to see this great auditorium filled as it is. It is significant and I think heartening that so many young men and women from near and far are enrolling in this school, a school whose board of trustees are God's chosen prophets, a school which maintains high academic standards, at the same time adhering to gospel teachings. I know of no institution of higher learning, and I believe I know quite well many of them, where students may be more adequately trained to meet the requirements, the exacting demands of the world in which we live. It's not a common experience for me to speak to young men and women. Ordinarily, my listeners are mature women, Relief Society women in the main. However, I feel that my many experiences have given me some concepts, some views, some opinions related to young men and women, which I am happy to pass on to you this morning, at least for your consideration. A few weeks ago, I stood at the gate of an airport in Chicago, waiting to be admitted to board the plane to return home from a church assignment. I noted through the gate a very fine-appearing young man, about 20 years of age, standing near the plane's boarding platform, conversing with an airline's attendant. They seemed to be in rather serious, almost argumentative conversation, and so I watched them. A few moments later, as I approached the boarding platform, I saw that the young man was blind, and I saw beside him a beautiful dog, which was a seeing eye dog. He was waiting for someone to receive his dog and to accompany him onto the plane. He was loath to part with the dog. It became my good fortune to have this young man sit beside me in the plane. He soon engaged me in very interesting and friendly conversation. I was impressed with his fund of general information, his intelligent questions, his discerning observations, his apparent interest and familiarity with what was going on in the world, and his concern that the present international tensions would be eased and that the great scientific advancements would be directed toward making a better world. I commented to him upon his fund of knowledge and the scope of his interests and the soundness of his views, whereupon he thoughtfully replied, "Well, I seem to know a little bit about a great many things, don't I?" But he continued, "I don't know what is most important for me to know. I don't know how to pursue my own best interests in life. I'm continually faced with conflicting values. What seems very important to me today doesn't seem so tomorrow." Then he went on to explain that when one is blind, he is inclined to reach out indiscriminately for everything with a determination that he shall be denied as little as possible because he is sightless. As a result, he said, he becomes bewildered and confused as to what is of basic importance to him and as to the direction his life should follow. As he spoke, I thought to myself, there are countless young men and women in the world today who are not sightless, but who nonetheless are bewildered and blind insofar as being able to identify the values that are constant and good and that will give the greatest meaning and purpose to their lives. And then I asked myself, is it any wonder? There are powerful forces contributing to the confusion of young people. They are relentlessly bombarded by newspapers, magazines, books, television, radio, and other types of communication, attempting to influence their thinking and condition their behavior. We are living in a high-powered, fast-moving era, where only a comparatively short time ago it took days that lengthened into weeks to reach a foreign shore. Now it's only a matter of hours. The world is growing smaller every hour, and many a young person finds himself in places where he little thought he ever would be found. Places which present not only new sights to him, but traditions, philosophies, human relationships and goals, which are different from those he has always known and respected. The world presently is going through a period of intense struggle. While we are not engaged actually in a shooting war, we are perilously near the brink. This is causing feelings of uncertainty among young people. Even the home, that in the past could be relied upon as the great stabilizer is undergoing tremendous change. And so it is small wonder that insecurity stalks the path of many of our young people, and that confusion exists in their minds as to what is of basic importance, that even those with the clearest of vision find it difficult to define the values by which they hope to live. It is my conviction that every normal young man and woman desires to live a happy, useful life. I believe in the innate goodness of young people. I believe every young person longs for security, the security of a good name and a good home, the security of social acceptance. I believe this is extremely important to young people. Recently, only 2 weeks ago at a conference in New York City, I heard Dr. Harold Taylor, former president of Sarah Lawrence College and an eminent educator and author, say that he regarded social acceptance as one of the basic needs of college students and something with which colleges must learn to deal more adequately. He had a critical attitude toward the present fraternity system in most colleges, saying that this was not the sound answer to social acceptance. Young people also want the security of economic well-being and the security of peace of mind. All of these are important. It's every person's privilege, I believe, to be happy and useful and to enjoy all of these securities, if he will choose the path that leads to these ends. Every serious student of social trends recognizes the integral importance of the home in the well-being and security of the individual. The church, through revealed truth, has always taught the importance of the home and the family, not only for earth life, but for the eternities. One of the important roles of the home is to help family members to develop high ideals and moral standards. It should set the foundation upon which sound judgments may be made in choosing those values that will contribute most to the personal growth and development and the ultimate well-being of family members as individuals. The home should be the first to establish the gauge that will enable youth to measure the true values of life. Every young person has a right to feel that in his home he has a place of safety, a place where he is loved and understood. Family unity and integrity are necessary to supply these needs. But the father and mother should not be expected to shoulder this load alone. Good homemaking is a joint enterprise involving every member of the family. The family whose members work together, who are considerate of one another, is bound to go far in love, accomplishment, and happiness. I would suggest to every young man and woman here today a consideration of what he or she is contributing to the stability, the respectability, and the honor of the family and the parental home. Occasionally ask yourselves, am I giving to my home in proper ratio to what I am expecting from it? When a decision must be made as to how you will conduct yourself or which step you should take, I suggest that you pause and measure the action against its effect upon your home and family and your family name. Say to yourself, will this reflect credit upon my home, my parents, my brothers and sisters? Is it in harmony with the accepted standards of my home? Will it be pleasing to those who love me most and who are willing to do most for me? Many a well-ordered, respectable home has been thrown into a state of chaos and disrepute, and parents into a state of heartbreak by the irresponsible actions of a young man or woman who failed to weigh his conduct against the best interests of the home and the family from which he came. Every single young man and woman has a responsibility to do his part in preserving the strong human bonds which bind the family together and which enable the home to meet its responsibility to its members. Just as parental homes are important, so are the new homes which young people establish when they marry. Every normal, healthy person should marry. Marriage opens the way for the most satisfying living. It offers love, companionship, and the social contacts that are worthwhile. It offers emotional security and that most glorious of all privileges, the bearing and rearing of children. A good marriage rests upon a proper courtship and a careful selection of a mate. President McKay has said that Latter-day Saint young people should choose their mates by judgment and inspiration as well as by emotion. With Latter-day Saints, the marriage solemnized in the house of the Lord is the foundation upon which we build. So we must not only recognize the responsibility of the parental home, but also the responsibility of the home which we ourselves establish to provide for the children coming to them those experiences which enable them to identify values and choose those which will lead toward adequate behavior and purposeful living. Now, there are other important aspects of life with which young people must concern themselves. Today, the world is seeking for trained and capable leaders. It is calling for men and women with character and ability to take hold of the almost unbelievable forces that have been released by science and harness them for man's blessing rather than his destruction. I think if I were to be asked this morning what I regard as one of the greatest needs of society today, I would say without hesitation, it is great leaders, trained, experienced, morally strong leaders, unwilling to compromise principles for expediency, leaders who are courageous in speaking out for what is right, regardless of the lethargy of others or fear of criticism or defeat. Leaders that are sure of the positions which they take because they have a basis of truth upon which their judgments rest. Leaders who can chart a course with intelligence, moral fortitude, and conviction. Such leadership is not found often today. I assure you this is true. Such leadership is not even found always among persons who hold positions of leadership. I believe it was Dr. Overstreet who said that one is not necessarily a leader by virtue of sitting on a platform or by virtue of holding a position of leadership. A real leader is one who can attract and hold attention, influence opinion, and guide action in the accomplishment of goals in which he believes. All too frequently, I see a lack of such leadership. To illustrate, 3 or 4 weeks ago, I attended in one of our great cities of this nation a national conference of leaders of organized women. Action was proposed, which many of those present did not approve, recognizing that it was not only not good for organized women of America, but in fact, it would be detrimental to America itself. Yet, the feeble attempts at opposition were almost appalling. The need for someone with real leadership to speak up with conviction as to what was right, based on a sure knowledge of the truth for which they stood, was urgent. At length, one real, straight-thinking leader whose views were based on true principles of Americanism arose, and the group fell into line with her thinking with such speed that it was not long until the action was stopped. Now, we are also living in a highly competitive society. Special abilities and training are needed, not alone to meet the requirements of skilled pursuits, but to weather the intense competition of our times. So we must regard education and training as among the very important things of life for young people. Important in the development of leadership, important in meeting the competition of our day. Education in its broad sense not only unlocks for youth the doors of a life rich in cultural values and understanding and appreciation, but it places one in a favorable position insofar as opportunities, social advantages, beneficial services, and economic security are concerned. The boundaries of knowledge are ever widening. It is a wise young man or woman who pursues education, whether it be academic or vocational, who climbs as high as possible on the ladder of learning. If he hasn't the money for an education, and many do not, since education is costly, I remind him that a number of persons who have achieved outstanding success in life worked their way through school, doing so with no impairment to their persons or to their prestige. In fact, most persons take great pride in this accomplishment. Education is an important factor in one's economic well-being. A well-known adage is, the more you learn, the more you earn. While there are higher things in life than money, it would not be judicious to disregard its value in today's world. Money honestly earned through one's skills and abilities and wisely spent means advantages to oneself and his loved ones, and also enables him materially to aid in the promotion of worthy causes and programs for his fellow men. The more one learns, the greater is his self-development. The more abundant becomes his individual life, and the richer his social contributions. I have no quarrel with people who earn lots of money, provided they earn it honestly and spend it properly. The Church places divine approval on learning, extending its usefulness into the eternities. In the Doctrine and Covenants we read, whatever principle of intelligence we attain unto in this life, it will rise with us in the resurrection. And if a person gains more knowledge and intelligence in this life through his diligence and obedience than another, he will have so much the advantage in the world to come. The rewards of education compel us to place it among the important things of life. And I commend you young people today who are furthering your education in a university which offers you well-balanced education. Young people would do well also to consider, particularly at this time, the importance of individual initiative and individual effort in relation to one's happiness and well-being. We cannot help being concerned today over the risks of impairment to the character of the individual being brought about by government and other agencies doing too much for him. To work out a successful life is not to sit idly by, dreaming and yearning for some great institution or some great miracle to thrust opportunities and advantages upon us. It is to plan, to work, to overcome difficulties, to master self, to rise above adverse circumstances. It is to perform hourly, daily, weekly, the tedious, immediate tasks and duties at hand to the best of one's ability. One must pay the price of successful living and true happiness in honest, daily, individual effort. True religious concepts hold a firm position among the important values of life. In fact, I think I would say they are of first importance. Through the ages, countless persons have attested that religion is a requisite for a purposeful, satisfying life. Religion not only gives purpose to life, but it teaches one to cherish life, to have increased respect for humanity. It teaches one to seek truth, to love justice and to live honorably. It embodies hope, faith, and charity. It helps one to understand the eternal verities. President David O. McKay offers four reasons for giving proper religious training to youth as follows. First, youth need religion to maintain a proper equilibrium during the formative period of their lives. Second, youth should have religion in order to stabilize society. Third, youth need religion to satisfy the innate longing of the soul. Fourth, youth need religion to comply properly with the purposes of creation. These are from his book, The Pathway to Happiness. As a part of his religious training and experience, I would commend to you today a reading, a regular, systematic reading of the scriptures. I think that familiarity with the Bible is a mark of a truly educated person. All scripture is given by inspiration of God, said Timothy, and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness. Now, while we are living in a day of grave and deep apprehension, and the future may seem incalculable, while there is much to bewilder and confuse young people with regard to what is of basic importance in their lives, this is not a gloomy moment in history, nor is it a day devoid of promise for young people. Today, mankind stands on a higher ground of scientific and intellectual truth than ever before in the history of the world. Today, there are greater opportunities than ever before for strong moral leadership. There is plenty of room at the top. I assure you of that. The restored gospel of Christ is upon the earth. There are God's chosen prophets among us to lead, to guide, to counsel us with inspired wisdom. The false, the artificial, the shoddy, the worthless in life should not blind the eyes of our Latter-day Saint youth in choosing those values which will lead them into productive living. If any young people in the entire world should have clear vision, it is our Latter-day Saint boys and girls. If the world may look to any group for its future leaders, it should be able to look to our Latter-day Saint youth, to you young men and women sitting in this auditorium this morning. For you have the teachings of the church, which reach into your homes, into your educational concepts and goals, and which give you religious truths through which you may properly criticize all that presents itself to you in today's busy and confusing world. Upon you, students of Brigham Young University, coming with few exceptions from Latter-day Saint homes, enjoying the rich educational opportunities in a school characterized by fine standards of training, coupled with a full acceptance of revealed religious truths, rests a responsibility for a serious approach to life. If young men and women, such as you, cannot see clearly the direction you should travel and the course you should pursue, if you cannot measure up to the requirements of a good life, then I ask you, to whom may we turn? May the Lord bless you to make the most of the opportunities which are yours. I sincerely pray in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.